Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air, episode 38. How are you doing, Alex?
Time is flying by. I'm good, thank you. How are you? You are in the UK, right?
Yes, I'm in Scotland. And I have to say, I haven't been in Scotland like in over a decade. I love Scotland. It's so, everyone is so nice. The nature is so beautiful. There's Marks and Spencers everywhere, which is perfect.
Perfect for you.
Excuse me, isn't Marks and Spencer like kind of a premium grocery store?
Yeah, that's why I said it's perfect for you.
Yeah, as if you don't like that kind of stuff.
I love Marks and Spencer. Can I just say that is such a treat, especially because they're all over, for example, in the Middle East, they're everywhere. And there's just something so comforting about a movie night with their biscuits and their chocolates and all that. I can spend, I have to be dragged out of that, especially the sweet and kind of chocolate and biscuit and the cookies and the cakes and the sourdough. Goodness me, the sourdough. It's good.
Okay, good. I haven't tried that. So speaking of like sweet treats, I would like to remind all you guys who send so much support and love to the podcast, the greatest thing you can do to help us out is to leave a review. If you're, you know, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, just take, like, even while you're listening right now, take 1 minute. If you're on Spotify, it takes 1 second to enter your star rating. 5 stars, please. But if you're on Apple, you can either give a star rating or leave a comment. It makes such a big difference and it takes no time at all. And we're very grateful for that, of course.
Yeah, thank you guys who have already done that. We're always seeing it. We get fed these updates in data, but also we see them when we go on to see what you guys are commenting on the YouTube video version of the podcast, but also when you're leaving feedback across all of those other platforms, it really does help the message be spread around about On Air. And it was great because just recently both Dan and I were at different conferences and people were coming up to us and saying, hey, we love the podcast. And that's still really surreal. So thank you for that indeed.
It is really awesome. So I'm in the UK here until tomorrow. So until Wednesday when this goes up, we're recording late on Tuesday evening. And I am flying Virgin Atlantic to leave the UK. I'm so excited. And one, you know, big piece of news that came out this week was that Virgin Atlantic, basically there was an interview in the Times, the newspaper in the UK, celebrating Virgin Atlantic's 40th anniversary. And their founder, who's one of your heroes, Alex, Richard Branson, had a lot to say.
He did, and he always does. And I think it's amazing that he is, I still believe he is as insightful as ever, even now, after so much time and I don't just mean, oh, because he's older. I just mean in the way that the industry has changed, in the way that the industry almost looks nothing like the industry that he started very early on in developing and creating what is now Virgin Atlantic. And I still stand by the fact that one of the reasons that I personally have always, you know, eat, sleep, live, breathe aviation from age 3, 4, 5, 6 years old is because of the book that my mum handed to me that I spoke about in episode 1 of the podcast when it was more kind of getting to know us. It was a Richard Branson short read. It's still available today. I'm sure it's really cheap because it's a smaller, it's a short read book. It's called Screw It, Let's Do It by Richard Branson. And it's genuinely one of the key moments that opened my eyes to the way that he spoke about aviation, the way that he said that this was an industry that got into his blood like nothing else and made him feel passionate and excited and like he wasn't working. And I can remember reading how he spoke about aviation and thinking, oh my God, that's how I feel about, you know, aviation. And I wasn't sure why, and there was no family link and so on. So I massively respect the guy. And I think, you know, when he has something to say, more often than not, it's really insightful. And this was one of those scenarios with the interview in the Times. But there were some big highlights in this interview, right?
Yeah, there were. So the context here is that, unfortunately, although Virgin Atlantic is one of the best airlines in Europe, it is not profitable. It has not been since COVID. In their last financial year, they lost over £100 million, which is obviously huge in a year when many airlines were making record profits. So it's really sad to see a high quality airline doing badly. And Richard Branson sort of discusses in this interview some ideas he has, maybe not for more profitability, but to really give the brand back its oomph. Because back in the day, it was, first of all, it was like sort of continuing the legacy of Pan Am by sort of sexualizing the whole flight attendant thing with the red dresses and high heels and lipstick and everything. Now, obviously, we're in a very different world. They were also pioneers with flatbeds and stuff. So if you look what's on their aircraft now, it's maybe not as leading. But in this interview, Richard Branson promises a new upper class that he says, quote, is ridiculously good and better than BA first class. So we have no idea what he means, because obviously they're just receiving new deliveries now, right, Alex?
Yeah, so it's funny because their latest products are still pretty new. And I'm thinking about, for example, the products that you'll find on the A330neo and also the 787-9. These are upper class products that are only a few years old in some scenarios, but also you've got those shared spaces on board, such as the loft, which replaced the onboard bar. And the onboard bar was ultimately the big, sexy social area for upper class passengers to get together and mingle on the overnight flights. And I can remember, Dan, I remember when I was coming back from New York one time in upper class on Virgin, and I think we were texting, this was years ago, and you texted me saying, if you want to sleep, do not sit near the bar. Because, of course, those overnight transatlantic flights are so short, sometimes less than 6 hours from JFK to Heathrow if you have a strong tailwind. And yet still, you know, there are people at the bar drinking their way on the overnight to London rather than, for example, you know, I was in the mood for socializing for about, you know, 20 minutes and I wanted to
that sounds like
I wanted to get cozy and get some sleep, because you always have that urgency. So anyway, these aircraft and these cabins are not dated by any means. But in aviation, I think it's really important for people to remember this, it takes years to start the sketching, the designing, the manufacturing, the sourcing of materials, and also battling the supply chain difficulties in aviation. It takes years to go from the initial concept of a product to actually launching and then rolling out that product onto an aircraft. So something like the Singapore Airlines first class suite was first in the plans around 7 to 8 years prior to that, to that first delivery from Toulouse to Singapore. You know that one, Dan, that I was on and you were not? That one?
The
A380 first class, the meteor shower over Iran, the world's best flight, that one. You remember?
We've spoken about it before. Well, I've flown it a few times since then. So.
But you weren't on that flight, which was the delivery. Anyway, so these things really, really take a lot of time. And you can imagine that over the course of, let's say, 8 years, how much in aviation things change. What other new products are launched? And in aviation, you kind of have these cycles. And I would say that right now, we are in a period whereby airlines are hunkering down with the design agencies and working on the designs of things that we're going to see again in about 5 years' time. And I say that because I told you I was at AIX in Hamburg last week, or whenever it was, week before. Last week. And, you know, listening and meeting some of the designers and their airline clients and so on. And it's interesting, the stuff that they're working on. There are some really interesting plans. But when you actually take those plans from plans to manufacturing, and then you look at, okay, they're going to launch on this aircraft, but this aircraft isn't even certified yet, or the delivery is not due until 2028, and so on and so on. You realize just how lengthy it was, which is why I think it's interesting. I think that's important context to Branson's comments about how there is going to be what he is calling an amazing new upper class seat. I would expect as much, because if they have launched this seat just a couple of years ago, which they have, their latest seat is around a few years old on some aircraft, or at least the latest cabin concepts, then it means that they are already back at the drawing board and starting again to hopefully reinvest on something we'll see in a few years time.
Yeah, I do find this very strange, because I initially found it strange when they introduced one type of seat on the A350 and then a different type of seat on the A330neo, because doing that creates inconsistency. Now they have three products. So is Mr. Branson saying they're going to introduce four products? And in that case, where, how? Like, I have so many questions about how that's going to work. So for now, yeah, I'm not reading too much into this, but it is interesting to see that he thinks there needs to be an even better product on board. And you sort of mentioned the bar here, which has been a very famous feature on Virgin Atlantic. And when I flew them back in February, the bar was packed the whole flight. Crew socializing with passengers, passengers socializing with each other. And although I was like sitting in the last row, so I was really in the bar, I thought it was a fun... It is a fun kind of thing. And
it is. It's so social, isn't it? It fits the Virgin Atlantic brand. It fits the demographic of passengers who are in that cabin and would kind of expect to not be closing their suite door and no interaction. It's almost like there is a willingness of the Virgin Atlantic passenger to be social, to interact. It's Virgin Atlantic, I guess, their upper class area is the Soho House of the airline world. You know, it's not somewhere where eye contact should be avoided, but rather encouraged.
Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, we should remember that one of the original benefits of business class was networking and, you know, meeting other people, making friends. So the fact that this is really, you know, we're seeing private suites with doors, you don't even have to see another person the entire flight. That idea from the past has really been phased out. But I personally love that if you're in the mood to say, hey, I want to network, you can do that on Virgin Atlantic's older planes, the A330 and the 787, but you can't do that on their newer planes. You can do it on Emirates, on Qatar Airways to some extent as well, and to a much lesser, you know, less maybe pro-social environment on Etihad's A380, for example. But this is a very rare thing, and I think that it is good for Virgin Atlantic to try to reinvest in that idea because it's something that makes them really special.
Well, Branson explained in the interview, he said that replacing the bar with the concept, which is now the loft, which is basically this kind of lounge seating area, kind of two sofas facing each other, if you like, a couple of benches. These are on the 330neos and, of course, on the A350-1000, which is different to the products that you'll find on the 787, which have now the oldest product on the Virgin Atlantic long-haul fleet. Branson said that this was, quote, a dreadful mistake about replacing the bar. And he said that Virgin Atlantic will be bringing the bar back as soon as they possibly can. It's interesting because I kind of understand where he's coming from in how these social areas have not gone on to replace bars. And you just touched on this. Yeah. So the Qatar Airways bar is very often busy, especially on a day flight, not necessarily on those kind of shorter overnight flights where I think people prioritize sleep a little more, but it's definitely busy. Emirates, without question, the bar is a success. Okay, I mean, it is the, you know, the main part of the flight for many who are flying Emirates.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of other carriers that have these bars, but then let's look at the airlines that have social area, as you touched on, Etihad. Etihad have a social seating area,
which is
beautifully designed, beautifully designed in terms of the kind of like Ferrari leather in the goldy beige tone, and the table pops up from the ground because it has to be actually secured in the floor during takeoff and landing, but it pops up. There's a TV. You have nice mood lighting. You have those facet lighting. You know, the kind of the crisp cut shadowy effect that you have on across that Etihad. So it all that, you know, aesthetically everything is there, okay, but it's a flop. Nobody's ever there, ever. I mean, it's sad. Just that there's no one socializes there. It's a complete flop. Nobody really understands the purpose of it, because I guess because it's not a bar, somehow it's just not sexy enough, if that makes sense. There's just it's a complete flop. And when Virgin announced that they're, you know, taking away this bar concept and replacing it with a loft, I did wonder. I remember going to the reveal at Gatwick years ago. This was 2020. Where was I living at that time? So that's how I can work it out. This was 2019 in spring, and I was invited by the CEO to come down, have a look at the stuff, the new products, whatever. And I remember thinking, oh, this doesn't replace the bar very well. This is kind of like a waiting area.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that here we are now 5 years later, and actually Brunson's saying that was a massive mistake. They shouldn't have done that. And of course, he's not in the driving seat, remember, of Virgin Atlantic, but he still has his involvement. And of course, this is an airline that is 49% owned by Delta.
Yeah.
So that's always the bit that people will forget, and still doesn't make any money yet. Delta is extremely profitable.
Yeah, but it's kind of bad news, unfortunately, I feel, to be owned by US airline from a passenger experience perspective, great news from a profitability perspective, supposedly. Yeah. So the last piece of news that he gave us in this interview, this is like a Virgin Atlantic episode, but they deserve some attention as well, is that he wants to return to, and this will give you nightmares, Alex, to Gatwick. So before the pandemic, Virgin Atlantic had quite a sizable, especially vacation, sunny destination network from Gatwick on more leisure heavy aircraft, but that has been discontinued since COVID. And now, according to Richard Branson, he thinks they should relaunch these routes. But of course, Virgin Atlantic has now shut down their bar at Gatwick. Not their bar, their lounge. Speaking of the bar, they also, they do have slots at Gatwick that they're leasing to EasyJet. So they could take those, but it's a big process of moving airports. Do you think that, because I always, you know, think having hubs at two airports in the same city isn't incredibly efficient.
It's, look, Gatwick isn't attractive to most long haul carriers, especially most foreign carriers. So those airlines that are not British and that are flying to and from the UK, most airlines just don't want to be there. Okay. For a variety of reasons that we have also discussed. I thought his justification as to why Virgin Atlantic should be back at Gatwick was interesting, because I thought, okay, here's a smart guy. Let's hear the business case for it. You know, why is Virgin, which is struggling to even, you know, kind of break even in many scenarios, why is Virgin destined to return to Gatwick? Of course, his justification was only that, quote, it matters, it's where we started.
Yeah.
Is that strong enough to persuade the network planning, the finance guys, the chief financial officer, and so on and so on? I don't know if we will see Gatwick, a return of Virgin Atlantic at Gatwick, simply because of the loyal passenger base that they had around Gatwick. Because guess what? The loyal passenger base that they do have around Gatwick are also about 20 minutes away from Heathrow.
Yeah.
If they are 20 minutes away from Gatwick to the left, then it positions them nicely in Heathrow's catchment area and so on. You know, I get that there was definitely a holiday market at Gatwick, as you said, kind of the sunny destinations, the package holidays, the Disney holidays and so on. That seemed to make sense, but there's nothing, if you put me in charge of Virgin Atlantic tomorrow, that I could say, oh, well, this is why it has to be Gatwick instead of Heathrow. I feel Heathrow can do all of that and more at one tidy, clean hub where they should be laser focused on trying to streamline operations, cabin consistency, all network, everything in order to try to ultimately achieve financial health.
Yeah. This is going to be a very UK-based episode because we have another interesting story about BA, or not BA's, but the UK's other big carrier, BA.
Yeah, so this is something that happened a couple of days ago, and it did trigger a conversation. I had a few people get in touch with me about this on Twitter and Instagram. And this was a Houston flight going, so BA, London to Houston. The flight number was BA195. And it had flown several hours. Let me just check. I think it was around 5.5, almost 6 hours, to reach, all across the Atlantic, as is typical for this flight to Houston. So you're halfway there. So they cross the Atlantic. They reach the first part of the Canadian East Coast as they go to enter Canadian airspace, and the aircraft U-turns, makes a U-turn over Newfoundland and ultimately begins its long return over the Atlantic back to Heathrow, citing an issue with the Rolls-Royce engine that they would need servicing eventually at London Heathrow, where there are Rolls-Royce engineers, rather than divert to somewhere in Canada or the US. Understandably, people on Twitter were seeing this and were messaging me, what the hell? How pissed off must the passengers be? Because these passengers have departed London, have left UK airspace, have crossed the whole of the Atlantic Ocean, and have reached Canada only for the BA flight crew to admit, or well, to obviously discover and then admit by PA that they have an issue with one of the engines, and that they have clearance from speaking to their hub at London Heathrow that they will be diverting, but it won't be to anywhere in Canada or elsewhere in North America, but instead they will be returning over the Atlantic back to Heathrow, meaning these passengers were in the air for almost 9 hours, ending up exactly where they started from. This is now a pattern with BA, which is really interesting, where we see them in these scenarios kind of make these assessments, right? And it does seem like the fact that passengers will be peed off at the time they've spent flying around all day and ended up where they started is literally the last thing on the list.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I feel like it's not only British Airways, but it's a specifically transatlantic problem from what I see. So we see this quite a bit with United as well. We've seen some instances with Air France and KLM doing the same thing. Lufthansa a few times as well. There was one situation on a KLM flight where pretty much all the lavatories broke. So in that case, yeah, it makes sense to go back, because a flight without lavatories, even for a few hours, is not going to work. It is, in this situation, you know, why does British Airways return to London instead of keep going? There's a lot that goes into this. Ultimately, the pilots are the ones and operations at BA making the decision. But a few of the factors might be it's much easier for the airline to accommodate passengers at their hub than at a point they might divert to, or even at the destination. They might also think we're not going to continue to the destination because this aircraft might need some serious maintenance, which will be much cheaper and more affordable for us to do in London at our hub as well. It's also
say that's reason number one on the list. Yeah. I mean, there is that BA know how expensive it can be if you have an aircraft AOG, so basically like out of action on the ground, stuck, requiring maintenance somewhere super remote. That is incredibly costly. You're thinking about you are flying in spare parts, you are flying in engineers. How do you fly across, for example, an engine if the engine needs to be replaced?
Yeah.
You know, these things are possible, but they're incredibly expensive. And not too long ago, there was a BAA 380 stuck in North America, and it was there for ages after diverting. So, of course, they want to avoid all of these scenarios. At the same time, you know what you said about how, you know, that BA can accommodate their passengers and reaccommodate them on other flights much better from their hub. So it flies 6 hours all the way back and has the passengers start again from Heathrow. I mean, would that really have gone down well with the passengers in terms of knowing that they could have diverted to Montreal or New York? Or these are not, this is not a remote part of the world by any means. I mean, you know, they can easily reach Houston from these different North American hubs.
Yeah, it's not about the airline. It's not about what the passengers think. It's about where can the airline easily find enough hotel rooms and maybe have, you know, partnerships with hotels so they can get it cheaper in that sense. I don't think they're thinking that much about passengers in this situation. And you're right. If you think about in January, we had that Air France A350 that had a tail strike on landing in Toronto. And I remember when I was in Toronto, I guess, 5 weeks ago, taking off from Toronto, we taxied by this Air France A350, which was parked over by the maintenance bays. And I was thinking, I forgot about this incident in that moment. And we taxied by, I was thinking, what is that doing here? Like, why is it not at the gate? This is an odd time for an Air France A350 to be here. I go on flight radar and I check aircraft on ground. And, you know, you can't see aircraft that have been on the ground for more than 30 days. So it wasn't showing up on flight radar. And I was so confused. But now, at this point, it's still in Toronto and it's being fixed. So Air France has had an A350 out of service for almost 6 months, paying to have it fixed on another continent, which again shows, you know, I don't think the BA situation was as serious where that aircraft would have to be grounded for a long time, but it is definitely something they want to avoid.
And we know that it can't have been so serious because they were able to fly back with a faulty engine, as the flight crew described, all over the Atlantic, all over again, and return to Heathrow and made a safe landing. And then the passengers have to start the whole thing again, you know, the next day. It's a lot in these scenarios. And I think when you just show, without the context of going into the decision-making process where they are analysing, you know, how difficult it will be to service the aircraft, what about AOG, what about passengers and hotel rooms and so on. If you just show the average person, oh, this person was on this flight and they reached Canada and they flew all the way back because the airline needed to carry out maintenance on the left engine, and it said, you know what, it's easier for us to do that at Heathrow where we're based rather than over in the States. How does that passenger react? Usually it's with fury. I mean, the DMs that I've had, people were saying that's insane. They would have kicked off. And please don't kick off. There's enough of that rubbish going around on TikTok. You know, respect these decisions no matter how, they might seem from time to time.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have another UK situation where I haven't managed to find many answers to this decision, but we've spoken earlier on the podcast about how the UK is slowly but surely introducing a system where you don't have to take out any liquids from your bags, but you can also carry liquids over 100 ml per piece, which hasn't really been a thing before, well, prior to 9/11, anywhere in the world. So this was a huge deal, and it's, of course, very exciting. I've tried the scanners, but now the UK has
please. It is not exciting. It is barely in use. Okay, even before you announce what this announcement is going to be, which makes the whole thing more just pathetic, right? Where have you used it and been excited? Where? Fast track at Terminal 5, the first class wing, and that's it?
Okay. Personally, it hasn't been useful to me yet, but I'm excited about the thought.
Exactly. That's because it's not anywhere. It's like, oh, okay, it's at City and it's at Leeds and it's at Southend. Great.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So anyway, at these airports, the new lighter liquid restrictions are being removed temporarily, and it was announced very suddenly. And now we're left from June 9th with the same old restrictions all over again.
Yeah, so this is funny because, as I said, right, it's barely in use in the UK. Remember, the UK was supposed to fall in line with the likes of Rome and all these other airports that have had these scanners for a long time. And the government set a mandate and they said, you have to, by summer 2024, have these machines where your passengers can leave everything in their bags and they no longer have to have the mini 100 ml liquids. You can have normal size liquids, for example, a big hairspray, a big deodorant, and so on and so on. And we arrive to summer 2024 and the big UK airports like Heathrow shrug their shoulders and say, sorry, no, we know it's a mandate, we know it, but, you know, we've missed it. Sorry, that's it. All yeah. part of broken Britain. Okay, nothing works. So what's funny is the few airports, and, you know, pats on the back to them, that actually were able to do something with these scanners. So it was Newcastle, Leeds, City, Aberdeen, Southend and Teesside. Okay, none of them, you know, vibrant cosmopolitan hubs, but, you know, mm-hmm. they play a role, at least in UK air travel and outbound tourism and so on. They're all, I guess, the Gothenburgs of the UK. Anyway, so I get this email from the government, okay, on the 7th of June, and it's in the evening, and it's about the 9th of June, and it says, Department for Transport says, from midnight, well, from 1 minute past midnight, on Sunday the 9th of June, 100 ml restrictions on liquids will temporarily be reintroduced for passengers travelling from the six regional airports, so only those six, where the new scanners are in full operation. So basically, to make this very simple and easy to understand, the six regional airports that did have the new scanners, so were able to say, leave your liquids in your bags, leave your laptops in the bags, don't worry about your mini deodorant, you can have a full-size one and everything, they were mandated by government that from last Sunday, just gone the 9th of June, they have to pretend that these scanners are not the latest next-gen ones and they have to go back to the small 100 mil rule like Heathrow, and you've got to take everything out. And they say, this temporary move is to enable further improvements to be made to the new checkpoint systems and will only affect a small number of passengers. This part was interesting for me. So they are admitting that only a small number of passengers were ever benefiting from these from this new policy, these flashy new scanners anyway. So they're winding it back and now using that as a, well, it was only a few anyway. You know, this will only affect a small number of passengers anyway. For most passengers, the UK government says, security measures will remain unchanged. Yes, because most passengers are travelling through most airports that do not have the updated scanners, and we're still taking all our stuff out when we don't need to be because it's 2024. So the background to this, which I guess is the important part, is they have put in the email from the government, this is a routine measure and is not in response to a specific threat. Because that was my first thought. But okay, right, good news. So it's not in response to a specific threat. Is it all completely pathetic? Absolutely.
Come on.
And for some reason, and I can't quite get to the bottom of why this is happening. Have you seen what is happening at Birmingham Airport in the UK?
I've seen crazy like videos, but I haven't read too much into it because I don't go to Birmingham.
This has been going on now for about 10 days or so. We've had quite a few messages from listeners who have said, guys, do you want to have a look at what is happening there? I'm just going to find some of these messages. It's bizarre. I don't know why it's happening. They are blaming the new updated security scanning situation, even though Birmingham was never on that list. But basically, people that are flying through Birmingham Airport are queuing for hours outside of the terminal to simply pass through security. And people that are paying for fast track are passing through security in over an hour. Minimum, but everyone else, hours, plural. It's
crazy.
Insane.
Yeah, that's actually, like, even last, what day was it? The 7th, I flew through Heathrow Terminal 5, and they have two, so I was on transit, which means you just get let out in the normal security. There's not even a priority fast track thing once you get to the security lines, but they had two of the new scanners. Only one was active, and keep in mind this was before they reintroduced the liquid restrictions. So I was like, of course I'm going in this line. I don't want to take anything out of my bag. The line looked as long as all the other lines. It ended up taking 35 minutes to pass through in the new scanner, while the other lines, I saw people who came like 20 minutes after us were through in 10 minutes in the regular scanner. So I was like, oh my God, what have I done? And it's just like, I don't know what the holdup was, but it wasn't really working.
I've got a message on Instagram from David. He says, hi, Alex, something for the podcast. Have you seen what's going on at Birmingham this week? People are queuing for 3 hours outside the airport for security. Oof. I've got another message from Aaron flagging the same. We have seen it. I mean, it just looks absolutely brutal. That is by no means... This is what I can't understand about these regional airports that are so desperate for international connectivity and will do anything. I mean, they fight tooth and nail abroad to try to secure long-haul operators, for example, airlines from China to fly through Birmingham, or they try to woo the Singaporeans, or they try to... You know, they're trying so hard to establish themselves. And then what? June arrives and they can't cope with the influx of EasyJet passengers
who are
traveling because it's summer, and it's a bit bizarre. Also, blaming the security situation, Birmingham never had those new airports. They're not on the list.
Yeah.
So it's not a good look.
It's very interesting. I think, speaking of the message you read, should we move on to Q&A? Because we have quite a few interesting questions.
Yes, let's do it. I have a message here from Andrew. He says, good day, Alex, big fan of the On Air podcast. Inspired by Dan, I booked a trip to Gothenburg from Heathrow to see what all the hype is about. I will be in the Gothenburg lounge Wednesday, heading home, listening to the podcast, and decided to make a bingo for myself to enjoy it even more. P.S. This also works as a drinking game. He's put, this link generates 30 randomized bingo cards, and he sent me a link. And Andrew, I can proudly announce, has sent what is the first ever On Air with Dan and Alex bingo / drinking game.
Stop. Okay.
So I didn't want to send this to you until we were actually on the podcast. So check your WhatsApp now, right? I'm sending it to you right now. And we'll have to publish this so that we'll put this on the stories perhaps so that the listeners can see it. But I'll read you some of the things where apparently if you hear this during an episode, you're either meant to drink or, you know, put a cross and finally get bingo. So some of them on the card include Heathrow A10 gate shout out, or the phrase, I mean, this one really triggered me, the phrase, the little airline that could. Okay. A Gothenburg shout out, of course. A dispute about Toulouse being in the south of France. Frankfurt Airport shudder.
Okay. Okay, how about we share the rest of this on our stories? Because I need to share this. This is amazing.
This is Andrew. Really nice work.
Wow. I think one thing missing from here, which was like more of an early thing we would do, is almost 10 years ago.
That was almost a thing. Yeah, almost 10 years ago. The bit that I want to know, Andrew, and you'll have to get in touch with us, is in your message you say, inspired by Dan, I booked a trip to Gothenburg from Heathrow to see what all the hype is about. Dear God, tell me that was a joke. Right? Because I don't think he's joking. He says, I will be in the Gothenburg Lounge Wednesday, heading home, listening to the podcast. So I think he actually went because of you. So I think it's time to reach out to whatever the local government is there, Dan, and demonstrate with hard evidence that you actually brought an international, potentially Australian, because he starts his message with good day, visitor to Gothenburg. I think Gothenburg's now a hub.
I know. You're welcome, Gothenburg.
Wow.
So I have a question here from Sam Cooper. He says, I have another question for you guys. I was just wondering what the best meal you both have had on a plane ever was. I'll let you guys decide if Alex is allowed to include his fancy private jet flights or not. Love that. And what airline were you flying with?
Alex. Oh, this is really easy for me because mine was recently.
But are we including private jets or no?
We're not including private jets. We're not.
Okay, no. So
mine was recently. Mine was on the 21st of April because I documented it. Here we go. It was on Bangkok to Doha on Qatar Airways. It was a collaboration with a Thai chef, Chef Ton. And I actually messaged him on Instagram to say, wow, this was amazing. So Chef Ton is the chef that they collaborated with. And on the menu, It was noted as a river prawn, which is a signature shrimp, Thai red fried rice curry with sweet and sour chicken. When it was presented, this was hands down the tastiest, most beautifully, I mean, put together Thai red king prawn curry. To think it was on an aircraft, I was mind blown. This dish was absolutely delicious that I had to tell everyone about it. I got in touch with the chef himself that QR had collaborated with. I messaged him on Instagram. I told QR this is categorically the best dish I've ever had on QR ever. And it's come outstation catering from Bangkok with this collaboration with Chef Ton. And yeah, it was absolutely beautiful. That was just in April.
I'm not surprised it was from Thailand. So yeah. I think it's impossible to choose one, but I generally love Emirates First Class Catering personally out of Dubai. And last year when I flew with them first class to Frankfurt, I got this like butternut squash risotto, which sounds quite basic, but it was so incredibly good. And then I mean, Singapore Airlines First Class have had some amazing meals. Also, any catering out of Taiwan, personally, like I'm a huge fan of Chinese style cuisine, and I think they have amazing
catering out of Asia can be so good, can't it?
Yeah, it really can. And I'm really excited because I realized that Korean Air, I'm flying them in a few months, has introduced a new type of meal option, which this is only really interesting for me and very few other people. But you know how, like, when you order special meals for vegans, there's usually non-dairy vegetarian. Sometimes there's vegetarian oriental, which is like Chinese style. But Korean Air has introduced something that I love, Korean vegan meal. So I cannot wait to try that and get to see what
Emirates,
they can do.
Emirates is really betting big on vegan meals on board. They are. Especially like this year, they're 300 recipes of new vegan food, and they say that plant-based cuisine has increased by 40%. They see it as one of the fastest growing food trends in the history of the airline in terms of who they're catering for. They say that there's going to be massive demand throughout 2024. And yeah, it's really interesting, you know, because my friend Khanim, who's got all these vegan restaurants, that I always hear about this, and he's it was flagging to me the airlines that are doing more than his own home airline. He wants more, and understandably so, because there's huge demand. Just quickly, before we move on to the next question, what's the best airline economy class meal that you've had?
One time I got dim sum on Singapore Airlines in economy, which I was like quite blown away by. So
yeah,
I would say it's that, or again, something I've had on Emirates. What about you?
Mine definitely Singapore Airlines also. Singapore Airlines.
They're amazing.
Yeah, I can't remember the ins and outs of the dish, but I'm sure it was just a kind of Singaporean chicken rice or a take on a chicken rice, but it was beautiful. And I remember thinking, and the generous portion size, and just didn't feel like airplane food at all.
That's amazing when you get that in economy. So I have another fun question from Dominic. What are our top five favorite airports in Europe?
Oh, do you know what? Zurich has fallen in my estimation since the other day. Since my transit the other day. I mean, for God's sake, their security queues, I told you, it's one by one. You can't even do it simultaneously in parallel. That's still right, Toulouse.
I can say mine if you want first.
Go on. Yeah.
So
yeah, do that.
I can't like rank them 1 to 5, but I'll say top five in general.
Yeah.
Helsinki Airport, absolutely awesome for transit.
Yeah.
This is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, but Gothenburg Airport, I love how efficient it is. It's small, it gets the job done. There's never any crazy lines, at least if you have priority. I also love Oslo Airport. Again, like I'm giving it all to the Nordics, but great airports up there. What else do I like? If we're counting Istanbul, although it's like way too big, it's a beautiful airport with everything you need. You can get like massages. It has so many different dining options. Good, you know, you can buy Turkish Delight, that kind of fun stuff. And I'll think about my last one while you list yours.
I would say Helsinki for sure, Heathrow Terminal 5, Zurich, Rome, Munich. Okay, that's five.
That's five. Yeah, that was quick. I don't mind German airports, but I never feel like they're something that like blows me away because they're so good.
No, but it's just a necessity, isn't it? Like, there's just so many reasons why you end up having to transit via Germany. And if it's got to be Germany, then give me Munich. Don't give me the other one.
Yeah. So I guess in a way you could say London City, because although the airport itself is terrible, it's so convenient that it's just that, you know, that's, and it has cool views on approach.
I haven't been to London City Airport in a while. But same one here, of my most memorable moments at London, I think the last time I went was just, actually that was the flight I took just before the pandemic. Yeah. And I remember I was all masked up. And people were looking at me and as if I was the issue because I was wearing a mask. This is like pre-lockdown, maybe a week before. But my funny memory of a city airport that I always think about when I think of city is being there on the morning that the UK voted out of the EU when Brexit was. And you know, the city is like, London City Airport is of course the big financial hub airport, right? Because it's in the city near to Canary Wharf and so on. So they have all these screens everywhere showing you the stock market movements, share prices and so on, and they're live streaming Bloomberg and CNBC and so on. Well, it was just funny being in a terminal surrounded by red, you know, shares plummeting and these stocks falling and, you know, Britain votes out. And I remember being with my friend and we were like, what is happening?
Wow. So I just have to add another fun question here. Moritz asked, what are our favorite aviation related movies?
Oh, that requires some thought. But
you told me your favorite movie,
Flight Plan. Yeah. Have you still not seen it?
No, I'm putting it here.
Do you take anything I say seriously, Dan? Do you?
I told you to watch so many things for years, but I'm adding it. I've saved it somewhere already, but I'm
Please watch Flight Plan. Such a good film. It's set on an E-474, which is basically, I told you, a 747 and a Dreamliner had a baby and you get this fictional aircraft. Yeah. It's such a good film. Jodie Foster, strong female lead. I mean, it's just, it has everything. You have to watch this film. Flight Plan's really good. Home Alone gets me at the holiday period. You know, we've spoken about this before because there's so much set with the on American jets. Otherwise, I can't watch especially newer series. There's a series right now that's being streamed in the UK and I can get it if I turn my VPN on, called Red Eye on ITV, catch up, whatever it is, ITVX. And people are telling me, oh, you should watch that. I can't. I couldn't watch Idris Elba in Hijack on Apple TV. Everyone was watching that. It just bugs me. There's so much wrong. I cringe.
I know.
I'm like, well, the first officer would never say that. Well, the cockpit door doesn't open like that. Well, the CSD shouldn't have been there in the first place. You know, it just, I can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. I have to say, I love Catch Me If You Can, like classic movie. But
oh, yeah. That's good.
That's really a good one.
Did you watch the series, the TV series, Pan Am?
Yes. Like when I, years
that
ago.
That was good. That was good. I recommend
that
anyone
was Margot
if you're looking for a
thing.
Margot
like
Robbie was not known, you know, during that period.
Yeah.
I think Margot Robbie's next job after that was The Wolf of Wall Street, and then she shot to instant fame. Everyone knew her name. That had a great cast, had Christina Ricci and others. And I would encourage anyone, because let's face it, what's on Netflix right now is just terrible, right? I mean, except Baby Reindeer, that wasn't so
amazing.
Bad. That was quite good. Yeah, that was quite good. Reindeer.
Imagine I'm in Scotland right now. And we were staying at an Airbnb a few nights ago where the host was called Fiona, which is the name of the... I was like, how about we change our plans?
Anyway, what I was going to say was, because most of what's out there right now is pretty rubbish, right? And that's what, at least the consensus, my friends agree. Anyway, if you're looking for a series... and you like aviation, even if you just, you know, like aviation a little bit. But yeah, Pan Am, that is a classy series to watch. It was quite a few years ago. God, actually, it was a while ago now, a long while ago. But it was really, really good. And great storylines, great acting, great investments in the set. And they even used John Travolta's Boeing 707 and converted that to have as an actual 707 Pan Am aircraft to film on. And they had some amazing episodes of being stuck in Haiti, stuff to do with the Soviet Union and the Cold War, things to do with an emergency landing at Hong Kong's Kai Tak. And these weren't even the main parts of the episode, but it was all there. I've just literally convinced myself to rewatch the series. So that is my plan.
Maybe I should as well. And this is funny because for you listeners, Alex and I have had a bit of a backstage obsession with Desperate Housewives. I watched it
several years ago. But I remember when my mom and sister wanted me to start watching it with them, I was like, I am not watching this. This sounds like a chick flick. This sounds rubbish. Yeah. Literally don't know. It's a murder mystery and all these assholes have got so much stuff going on.
Yeah. If only you could hear Alex's like imitation of the narration.
I think we're done now, Dan.
So I just have to say that I went on the Washington Post to read a little bit about Pan Am as we're talking. And apparently ABC was looking for another hit to replace its aging show, Desperate Housewives, and they chose Pan Am. So that's crazy.
Well, they have kind of the plots of the, you know, the whole mystery side of things. And because Pan Am wasn't just a series about, it's not an aviation series. It was more to do with the crew. And, you know, one of them was a double agent that was hired by MI6. And the other one was, you know, there was a lot going on. It was really, really good stuff.
Yeah, it really was.
Both series are good.
And on that note, guys, I think we both have to run. I'm going to go, you know, meet my reindeer. Kidding.
for anyone that hasn't seen Baby Reindeer on Netflix, they're going to not understand what it is you've just said.
Yeah, but it's creepy.
So it still sounds creepy even without the context.
Yeah.
Well, look, thank you guys for listening and for joining us as always. And we'll see you guys this time next week.
Yeah, see you then on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.